Shalom, and welcome to Discipleship Discussion Podcast, the show where we discuss how discipleship to Messiah Yeshua informs our choices and actions in everyday life. My name is Ben Frosted, and with me today are Chris Stevens and David Johnson. Our conversation today is going to be about relational maturity. So, now this is a big topic. I have to admit that, you know, we're just going to be like scratching the surface on this topic. And we're planning to hopefully delve into this a little more in future episodes, but this is going to be mostly like an overview of what we're talking about. So first of all, let's define what exactly are we talking about here by this phrase relational maturity. So I think a good way of summing it up would be being mature and healthy in our relationships with other people. Another term that touches on what we're talking about here is emotional health or emotional maturity. Because really, you know, our emotions and the way we interact with other people, they go hand in hand. And they have a huge impact on our life. So let's talk about why is it that we as humans sometimes struggle to get along? Well, we've all had experiences of conflict with other people, right? It's one of those things that is everywhere. Right? Whether in our communities of faith, in the workplace, in our families, strife is an issue that we have to deal with sometimes. So why is that?
Well, I think first off, we're fallen. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's a huge part in that, you know, we just haven't learned how to be mature in a lot of cases. And like me personally, I feel like I'm just starting to even scratch the surface on learning what it is to even be emotionally healthy and mature, learning about knowing my own feelings and seeing how they affect me and how they affect my family and everything that comes along with that.
Yeah, I think that definitely, you know, the fact that we live in a fallen world is a big part of it. But at the same time, there are communities and organizations out there that are able to make it work, right? So, you know, it's not all chaos and strife universally. So the question that we're posing today is what's the difference between, say, a family where things are dysfunctional and relationships are not working very well, and a different family where things are functional, you know, things are working well, relationships are going well. What's the difference between the two?
That's a really good question. In that regard, and also thinking about the definition of relational maturity or emotional health, a friend of mine was chatting with a buddy of his, and this buddy works in construction, kind of a tough guy, but pretty friendly, and they were talking about the definition of emotional maturity. And the tougher guy says, yeah, to me, emotional maturity means that I'm not fazed by other people, and I just do my own thing, and I'm not really affected by the people around me. And it would maybe indicate a level of unhealth in that answer, saying, I can be independent, I'm emotionally mature because I'm not affected by other people. I live independently, and they do their thing, and I do mine. Maybe that touches on the answer to your question as well.
So do you think that that's because he's just trying to put on this sort of macho, I'm not affected, or is he saying that I know the direction that I'm going, and my purpose and my vision and all those sorts of things, and so other people discouraging me and, you know, trying to bring me down doesn't affect me and pull me off my course? What do you think that he was saying in that?
To some degree, it might have been a manly answer, like you were saying, a macho answer. At times, we're not as in touch with our feelings and emotions as the ladies in our lives. Mm-hmm. And I mean, for me, I err towards being a super optimist. So I don't even get in touch sometimes with the realities of sadness and fear and anxiety when I need to slow down and say, hey, what are these feelings that I'm experiencing? And that's a part of emotional health as well.
Right. So what we're proposing here is that being emotionally and relationally mature makes the difference between being dysfunctional or being functional, right? So, you know, whether it's a family or a workplace, or a community, even a community of faith, the level of emotional and relational maturity determines basically our quality of life.
Oh, right? Absolutely. Like, I can give an example. I used to be in a workplace where we had a really great boss that cared about us deeply. He was an incredibly not emotionally mature. And so everybody would always be walking on eggshells because you didn't know. Well, you kind of knew the reaction. You knew he was going to fly off the handle over any little thing. But it had very negative consequences to the overall performance of the whole company because nobody felt that they could really give him an honest, straight answer about anything. And so there was a general lack of communication and there was lots of issues that came up. And a lot of people just didn't even want to come to work because of the effect that had on the group. And so, yeah, and I can totally see that in families and stuff like that, that can be totally the same thing where if one of the parents is emotionally immature, there can be huge ramifications to the kids. You know, it goes to communities of faith. It goes all the way across the board with that.
Yeah, that's right. And one thing to keep in mind is that emotional and relational health or maturity, it's not like an on-off switch, right? It's not like you either have it or you don't have it. All of us are somewhat healthy and somewhat unhealthy at the same time, right? It's like a continuum that goes both ways. And we go through phases, right? Where, you know, there are times where we're able to handle more just because of our life circumstances. And there are times when we can't handle as much.
Well, it's not sort of like health, like physical health as well, where, you know, what you're eating and how much sleep you're getting and your exterior conditions and, you know, how much you're exercising, all those things have a huge, huge effect on your physical health. And I think they translate into emotional health very, very significantly.
Right. Yeah, definitely. So what I want us to talk about here is kind of a different, non-conventional way of understanding human relationships. And one of the things that I'm drawing on here is what's known as family systems theory in marriage and family counseling. And family systems theory looks at emotional forces within a given system as a whole rather than just looking at individuals. So that has a big effect on how we look at situations, right? You know, in essence, family systems thinking looks at emotional health as a product of the emotional forces at work in our families and relationships with others, which is in contrast to the individual model of psychotherapy, you know, from Sigmund Freud. And ever since then, the focus has been on the individual. So if you're a counselor or a psychologist or whatever, someone comes into your room and needs help in this area, well, you treat them as an individual. You look at the symptoms, you try and diagnose them, and it goes on. Family systems theory is a revolutionarily different way of looking at how we interact with one another as people. We're not islands unto ourselves, right? We're all interconnected, and each of us affect each other in different ways. And so when there's a problem or an issue, it's not just the product of one person. It's a product of the emotional system as a whole.
So you're saying kind of like in a plumbing system, if there's a leak somewhere, it's not necessarily that it's just because that part has failed. It's because there's something else within the system that's creating pressure there.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if there's too much pressure in the system, you know, it's not the part that has too much pressure that's right. Like the whole system has too much pressure. Yeah. And even if it blows in one place, it's not that place that's the problem, right? Addressing the system as a whole, you need to address the pressure as a whole. So, you know, if I'm going through a hard time emotionally, that might have more to do with my position in my family and all the emotional forces in that system. And at the same time, my behavior and attitude affects everyone else that I'm connected with in one way or another.
And Ben, that's a really good example of a pipe leaking, because in my experience, I can be going about my day and all of a sudden realize I'm experiencing stress, anger, or I'm tearing up, and I'm like, wait, what is going on? I know something else in my life is not being addressed, because I'm experiencing this anxiety or stress or like extreme sadness, and all of a sudden this is coming out, the pressure is pushing out of one area of my life, and it makes us realize we need to get in touch with that emotional health.
Yeah, and these concepts, I think, have a lot of application, not just in our families, but even in our messianic congregations and communities, right? Every community is a complex emotional system, and the emotional forces have an enormous effect on each individual.
Yeah, it's interesting. In our families and in communities and in organizations, it's culture is so important. And sometimes in a family, we might have a manly culture or a macho culture. I grew up with three brothers. Or in a community, we might have a culture of peacekeeping. Maybe we don't address conflict or issues. Or maybe in an organization, there's a culture of some other area or an extreme. But realizing that we need a healthy culture where people can express themselves deeply, where we can deal with conflict in a healthy, mature way, where we're listening to each other deeply and engaging in relationships in a mature way.
Yeah, it's kind of like how different families have different unspoken rules, right? So some families have a rule where it's wrong to ever show anger. so you can be sad, and you can, and no one would ever word it that way, right? Like no one would ever say that's an actual rule, but it's unspoken and it's just assumed that you're never allowed to be angry, but you can show different emotions, right? You could be sad, you could be this, you could be that, but you can't be angry. Or maybe, for example, the men in the family are not allowed to show sadness. They can show anger, they can show frustration, but they're not allowed to show that they're sad. And so that affects the way they are. Yeah. All of our families, you know, growing up, we all have different unspoken rules that we grow up and that we're used to, and that affect the way we function on a daily basis. And sometimes we need to step back and analyze those things and say, are they helping us?
Well, and I think there's a lot of times there's patterns, whether we're conscious of them or not, that we interact in a certain way with certain people all the time, and it's a pattern that happens, and so this person will do this, and it's almost like a dance that happens where you know, this person will react and or will cause this to happen, and this person will react in this way, and then that's the,
and it's predictable,
it's the predictable thing, right? And so, you know, it just automatically happens, and I think that families get into that system, and I think congregations get into that routine too, where, you know, a lot of times we aren't even consciously thinking about how we're reacting to a situation. It's just programmed because that's how we've always done it.
Yeah, where, you know, you have your group discussion as a congregation or as a small group or whatever, and you get to a certain passage of scripture, and you kind of, you know the script already, that so-and-so is going to bring up this topic and so-and-so is going to react by saying this against that, and, you know, whatever. There's things like that go on sometimes.
Yeah, that is funny. It's so funny too for me, Ben and Chris, just realizing before I got married, before I had children, before I was engaged more in community, I felt really emotionally and relationally mature and healthy. But when I got married, I became really emotionally unhealthy. So is that my wife's fault or my kids' fault or my community's fault? Or is that actually my issue, that these relationships are bringing up areas of growth in me? And that can be a hard one to swallow sometimes, saying, hey, that's not my wife's fault. It's not my kids' fault. It's not my congregational friends that are causing me to feel or act this way. This is my own issue I need to work through. And maybe it's even God inviting me to engage more deeply with him, to experience healing, to experience his love, to experience greater identity in Messiah.
Yeah, and I think that's so important. Like you said, just being willing to take responsibility for our own feelings and actions and thoughts, and realizing that this is something that we need to grow in. Because, you know, I think for whatever reason, emotional health and emotional maturity, relational maturity, these are things that are often not talked about in religious settings, right? Because I think part of it is that emotions are sometimes viewed as less spiritual, right? They're not worthy of our attention. And so, you know, a lot of times as believers, you know, we're growing, quote unquote, in spiritual maturity, but we're not growing in emotional or relational maturity. So it's possible for, you know, there are people who might be passionate, sincere followers of Yeshua, and yet still be very immature in the way they handle their relationship with others, including other believers, right? You know, there are people out there who have their theology all mapped out. They know the Bible inside and out. They have a dynamic prayer life. They serve God heroically and selflessly, and yet they don't know how to get along with their spouse or with other believers, right? And they haven't developed any skills in handling relationships.
It's so true. And the greatest commandments are love the Lord your God with all your heart, and love your neighbor as yourself.
Right. Yep, exactly.
And those are going to take a long time for us to learn and master. Because if I'm realizing my wife is my neighbor, and the way that I listen to her, the way that I engage in mature, loving, healthy conflict with her, that is loving my neighbor, that means I have a long ways to go. Because I'm still learning. I'm trying to figure this out.
So do you guys think that part of it is that we figure that we should just know how to do it? Like, do you think that we figure that, you know, we're a new creation and that we should just be, you know, God's spirit should just be, you know, sort of pre-programming us with these skills? Do you think that's part of it?
Chris, that's a part of it. And maybe another part of it too is that we're scared to admit our weaknesses.
Yeah.
We're scared to admit how much room we have to grow. And it's scary to realize just the reality. Maybe I'm not as far ahead as I thought or as I'm portraying to other people in my life.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I think maybe we assume that it's there by default, right? That if we assume that knowing the scriptures better, having the right theology, you know, maybe having a dynamic prayer life, that all these things will just fall into place. But those things those are all important things, right? We should know the scriptures better. We should have the right theology. We should have a dynamic prayer life. But that alone is not a guarantee that we're going to be more mature in our relationships. And so I think the issue is that this is a symptom of deficient discipleship. Because discipleship and spiritual growth should include growing in relational and emotional maturity, right? They should go hand in hand. It's all part of spiritual maturity. It shouldn't be either or, right?
Mm-hmm. So do you think within our congregations and communities, why do you think it is the issue that it is?
Chris, one reason we could be struggling in that area is because, well, a pastor friend of mine, was talking lately about the idea of being a victim and an agent.
Mm.
So if we've experienced hardship or experienced abuse or experienced just the realities of the fall of the world and sin, then we are victims of those things. But then the way human nature works is we turn around and we replicate that same problem on others. So if we've been abused, we abuse. If we've been hurt, we hurt. And until we can get in touch with the reality of what we've experienced, find true healing through Yeshua and through the gospel, then we can't change that pattern. And in the Messianic movement, there are a lot of hurt people who are hurting people.
Yeah.
We've experienced things. Some of it has been wrong done to us. Then we've turned around and wronged others. And we really need to come to grips with that too and confess where we've wronged others and find healing for the ways we've been wronged.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Hurt people hurt people.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I would like to suggest that this, what we're talking about right now, is the single biggest problem facing the Messianic movement today, right? I would suggest that the biggest obstacle to unity, the biggest obstacle to healthy communities, is the lack of emotional and relational maturity. So, I mean, yeah, there are divisive theological issues out there that have wreaked havoc in communities, but I think that And not that those aren't important, right? Theological issues are important. I'm not saying we shouldn't fight for or stand for what we believe is right. But if we had our emotional and our relational issues cased, those other differences would not matter as much. We'd be able to deal with them, right? And without it leading to wounding and bitterness and anger and things like that, right? Even if our differences force us to part ways, we would be able to part ways on friendly terms rather than as enemies. So I really believe that this issue of relational maturity is the single biggest thing that affects our movement and the body of Messiah as a whole, for better or for worse.
I completely agree, Ben. I think that, like, one thing that I've noticed is, you know, when a group is relationally and emotionally mature, you want to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And when you want to be there, a lot of other issues just disappear because you want, you want to be there, right? Right. And I think that's one thing that if we can harness that, where people want to be there and they want to spend their time together, a lot of those other issues will become secondary. Mm-hmm. Like, I can even just, an example is Camp Zermatt Yah. You know, we, over a number of years, we had an incredible amount of unity and stuff like that, but the campers just wanted to be there.
Yeah.
And so a lot of the other stuff that, you know, often becomes an issue wasn't an issue because people just wanted to be there experiencing God together with like-minded people, and it was an incredible experience.
Yeah, definitely. So I think ultimately, you know, we could say the key to a healthy messianic movement is healthy communities. The key to healthy communities is healthy marriages and families. And of course, the key to healthy marriages and families is mature and healthy individuals. So it all comes back to, what can we do to make the messianic movement a better place? Well, each of us have a role to play in that, right? And we have to look at the ways that God is showing, you know, that we need to improve in our own lives.
That's so true. I came across this really interesting test or an inventory online lately. I'd recommend it to anyone who would want to do it. It's called the Emotional Healthy Inventory, or Emotional Health Inventory, rather. And you do the test, then it divides it up into four different results: emotional infant, emotional child, emotional adolescent, or emotional adult. And the definition for an emotional adult, I'll just read one sentence, but it's really good for us to get in touch with as a messianic movement. It's, I respect and love others without having to change them or becoming judgmental. I value people for who they are, not for what they can give me or how they behave. It's just interesting realizing, in touch with the messianic movement, we do have a difficult time with people being different than us.
Yes.
We think, since God called me to do something a certain way, that means everyone should be doing it. Because I have gotten this certain truth, that means other people need to be on board with it. But realizing we're connecting ourselves too much with other people, and realizing also we need to respect others where they are at.
Right. Yeah, and that's a hard thing to do. It's hard to be different. So, yeah, I think that definitely we need to be investing, you know, maybe it sounds bad to say investing in ourselves, but we need to be investing in becoming healthier and more mature in these areas, in investing in our marriages, in our families, investing in our communities, and all these ultimately work together.
Absolutely. Well, and I think, you know, again, our picture of ultimate emotional maturity needs to be Yeshua.
Yes.
Right? And so, you know, he definitely took time for himself to go up and pray and commune with God, and he took time just with his disciples, and sometimes he even displayed behavior that we would sometimes even be a little uncomfortable with, you know, where he, you know, said no to people. He, at times, even, he was very, very blunt. He cleared the temple of money changers, you know. Mm-hmm. There was some aspects of his life that sometimes, you know, I feel a little uncomfortable with it. I'm like, wow, I don't know what to do with that. And is that what I want to be in? Is that being emotionally mature, but that was Yeshua. And so, right. You know, understanding that those emotions are okay and that there's a place for acting in that way, even if it sometimes seems like he's being selfish or, you know, taking a really hard stand on things, you know?
That's so good, Chris. That's so good. A question for you then, how do we do that in a mature way? Because sometimes we mimic the master and we do it immaturely.
Right.
We say, he called them a brood of vipers, so I'm going to call them a brood of vipers. He turned the tables, I'm going to turn the tables. But we're doing it immaturely and we're destroying people in the process.
Well, I think Yeshua had the picture of what his goal was and what his mission was. Mm-hmm. And I think everything he did was on mission, right? It was for God's purposes. And so I think that a lot of times we're doing that for our mission, not God's mission.
Right. That's true. Maybe what you're sharing too about him taking a lot of alone time, maybe that time to process, maybe that got him deeply in touch as well with what God's mission was. Maybe that's part of it.
Yeah. Well, and we do see Yeshua displaying every emotion, right? You know, we see him expressing joy. We see him expressing sorrow and weeping. We see him expressing anger. We see him even expressing fear, right? Mm-hmm. He was very in touch with his emotions as a human being, right? But he was able to use those emotions in a healthy and a righteous way. So I want to shift gears just a little bit here as we're wrapping up. And that is just to talk a little bit about our need for wisdom. Right, and I think this ties in with what we were just talking about here. The book of Proverbs, it's full of insight regarding emotional and relational maturity. And the word for wisdom in Hebrew, chokhmah, it includes this concept that we're talking about right now, emotional maturity, right? Because biblical wisdom, chokhmah, is maturity in thinking, feeling, and acting. Actually, Bruce Waltke defines wisdom in the book of Proverbs as social skill, meaning skill in our relationship with God and with others. So chokhmah includes this concept of relational and emotional maturity. And we could say the opposite of chokhmah, the opposite of wisdom, is dysfunction. So this is what we need in our lives, in our families, in our communities. We need wisdom, right? We need to grow in our relationship with Yeshua, which should mean growing in relational maturity towards others. Like you said, David, it's, you know, we've got the two greatest commandments, right, that sum up the whole Torah. Love God and love your neighbor. So we can't forget that loving God comes first, right? That's the first commandment. Our relationship with Yeshua comes before every other relationship. But that doesn't mean we stop with just loving God. You know, John says in 1 John 4:20 to 21, if anyone says, I love God and hates his brother, he's a liar. For he who does not love his brother whom he has seen cannot love God whom he has not seen. And this commandment we have from him, whoever loves God must also love his brother. So, I guess to sum up, we're connected to others whether we like it or not, right? We're affected by others and we're connected to one another. We're part of this together. So I say we might as well like it.
Yeah, we gotta like it.
Well, and that's the best place to be, you know, where you're in a community, where you enjoy the people that you're around. That's where life really happens. You know, you can be a hermit, but there's not a whole lot of growth and life created there.
All right. Well, with that, we're going to wrap up our conversation for this time. So Discipleship Discussion is brought to you by Segula.net. Our goal is to cast a vision for a healthy and mature Messianic Torah movement and deal with issues that affect our everyday lives as disciples of Yeshua. If you have suggestions for topics that we should discuss on this show, send us an email at feedback@segula.net. Whether you're Messianic, Christian, Torah observant, or whatever lingo you prefer, we hope this conversation has been a blessing to you. And together, may we all become a glorious people in Messiah.